Good evening, everyone. Hope you had a nice afternoon. I've told this story multiple times in my life. I don't think it's exactly life-shattering or groundbreaking, but it's always one that in my family has come up a few times. It is the story my mom tells about whenever my older brother, about 2 years older than me, was, I think he was about 4 or 5, acting a little reckless, kind of hyper, running around. I don't exactly remember fully how the story goes. Either he was really careless with opening our back sliding door, which was glass, or he like literally ran into it. And I can't exactly remember the trail of events, but all I know, she tells the story that somehow it got off its hinges. It must have been some old military house. We were in the Air Force at the time, and it starts falling backwards towards him. And she remembers perfectly how it was falling towards him, and against all gravity, against all logic, against everything, it somehow pivoted and went the other way. And she'll never know. She's like, it felt like it was going to be one of those things that were going to be catastrophic, lethal things that could have happened. If not, it was at the very least going to be detrimental. But she saw, in her words, she saw God that day. She saw how something was happening, and there's just no explanation for it except that she saw God somehow intervene. And it's a cool story. It's something that, again, like I've always found moving. It's one that's very, resided in her heart and soul for, you know, 30 years now, 28 years now. But it's also one she's slightly cautious with sharing because she also knows, like, for one, like, you can't tell that story to someone who's cynical about God or faith or divine beings and be convinced, you know, like, so something fell and went the wrong way, right? Like, but she knows that that was an impactful moment for her and an act of God that she witnessed and she experienced. And it's something that, again, will always mean so much to her. The other reason she doesn't share it either is that so many parents, grandparents have the same stories where the thing that you fear happened, right? An act of God. That's what we're talking about tonight. This is a lesson. We're following up our story on David, and I encourage you or invite you to go over to 1 Chronicles 13. But this is a lesson that I have taught before, and I'll be honest, I've taught it twice, and I'm going to say this in a silly way, which is this is actually one of my favorite lessons to work through. I don't think it's my best lesson by a long shot. I think I was 24 years old when I wrote it. It's been years now that I've, but whenever I go back to it, if again, not my good writing skills or whatever, but like the story within it is one that I've been drawn back to multiple times because of how it's impactful to me. Because as we're talking about an act of God, we think about an act of God as this huge cataclysmic moment. You think about the Titanic going down, you know, and only God could have brought it down. You think about tsunamis or some other huge natural circumstances that happen, and those are these claims, these huge acts of God. And the reason that this has been a lesson I've come back towards is I realize now, you know, six, seven years later, how like I'm starting to realize that whenever we come into contact with these huge astronomical events or else these small little tragedies, these acts of God that take place, how easily we are swayed. And that's why I appreciate the song being led tonight, "Oh, for a faith that shall not shrink." Because that is, no matter how mature you are in your faith, no matter if you grew up in the church or not, there will come points in our life where we all have to reckon and work through our faith whenever something happens. And we experience something that feels like an act of God or else God should have been there. And so I realize this is one that I remember being 21 years old talking to youth groups at Bible camp for the first time, and 14-year-olds wondering how would a God allow people to be starved in nations and stuff like that, and having to reckon with that. But now being 31 years old and realizing that that's something that I'm going to have to work through in my own faith, in my own faithful development, like how all of us have to face these acts of God in our life. And I'm drawn to this story because it represents in many ways probably the first time I think I was a kid and I thought about that question, is how could God let that happen, or more importantly, how could God do that? And it's the story of the ark being taken from, let me catch up with my notes here for a second. First Chronicles 13, after coming together as a nation in rare unity and honestly God-seeking as a group, they unanimously saw and agreed that the Ark of the Covenant, which is where God resided, this holy symbol of the presence of God, should be brought back to their holy city of Jerusalem to establish their new direction, their new unity, and their newly crowned King David. And it's an exciting time, but as they load up the ark from Kiriath Jearim, a 10-mile journey to Jerusalem, the new cart that they fashion to transport the Ark of the Covenant that they made, for it seemed to stumble at some point, and this nice, sincere man, Uzzah, a good man who was the one who had been housing the Ark of the Covenant, the living place of God, if you will, reached out to not let the vessel of the Lord shamefully fall to the ground, because he valued the reputation of his God. He reached out, he touched it, and he died. Again, I couldn't tell you what age, but I remember hearing that story and having to reckon with that. It's like, whoa. There's a bit of a, dare I say, I don't like that nature to it. That doesn't really make sense to me. How could not just God allow that, but do that? And I remember struggling with that. And I think if you do a good amount of looking within the text, you'll notice that people may have questioned it too. An act of God doesn't always make sense. I get it. Don't touch it. That's a no-no. You're not supposed to do it. But he was aspiring towards a noble and enduring thing, which is to protect God. Why couldn't he just let this happen? And let's look at what David did. Let's go down to chapter 13, 1 Chronicles 13, verse 11. And David was angry because the Lord had broken out against Uzzah. And that place is called Perez Uzzah to this day. And David was afraid of God that day. And he said, how can I bring the Ark of God home to me? Anger, fear, confusion. That feels fairly normal. Now, I've read some commentators who think that perhaps David was upset with his own judgment on the matter. He shouldn't have allowed that to happen. That's a fair interpretation. But there does seem to be an honesty in the fact that he had an initial gut reaction, which is, I am angry at God in this moment. And it's pretty impactful. A few indications about maybe their problems. I'm not going to read these passages for now, but you can look to it later. Chapter 13, verse 2, initially they get together, this unified, excited group, eager for what's transpiring, and it says, like, let's let God in on the decision-making. So it seems like they've invited God to be a part of what their decision-making is going to be. But then instantly in verse 4, it says, then they made this decision to transport the Ark of the Covenant in a way it was not ordained to be carried. And they did it because it was agreeable in their eyes. So automatically, it's kind of like, oh, God's invited to this discussion. And it's just kind of lip service, when really, in reality, it's like, oh, like, we're going to do what we want to do. So maybe that's some good indications as to why this thing took place. Another thing that might be helpful is if you do some research, especially in the Leviticus and Exodus realm, where you see how the presence of God is this almighty fire of a presence, right? Like, no foolish mortal, no sinful man can approach the presence of God without getting struck down. And so that's why God was meticulous in protecting his people as well as his own holiness by having this separation. And all that makes perfect sense, right? All of that actually makes a lot of sense. But there's a bit of this level of, we are going to have acts of God in our life. We are going to have circumstances that feel without our reach, unfair, that guess what? We're not going to understand. You and I may not have some critical answer as to why, you know, X and Y took place. Sometimes something foul will take place, and we're going to have to reckon with that. We won't have the easy answers. An alternate storyline to this may have been this. Things happen that don't make sense. God acts or acted in a way that our viewpoint doesn't agree with. Some things are just off, and so David sulked and was shook by this moment. He went to question and be embittered by his God and his people. His mistrust and doubts about God continued to grow till he was separated by an unbreakable wall of mistrust, anger, and a decision to do life his way, fend for himself, and move in separate directions. I share that because I think that that's a lot of people. Whether you're young and you've witnessed something that didn't seem fair, or you're older and you've experienced grief or anger or hostility and you can't reconcile with it, and so you and this God, at least in your mind, is not coinciding, and how are you supposed to live with this? This is the crossroads we face, especially in light of God's nature, why some unanswerable questions loom over us, and we just sometimes disagree with his way. This is the problem. We face anger, fear, confusion, and defeat and say, this isn't for me. I think you can come to some answers again as to why God did what he did, but sometimes we just don't have that luxury. And so I want us to see, rather, how David responded to an act of God. And I'm not going to be dealing so much with, like, here are steps to be critical in your doubt. I think it's okay to have a critical mindset. I think it's okay to work through your doubts. I think it's understandable to ask big questions that your soul is yearning for as you come to see God for yourself. But what we're going to notice here, what I like about this story, if nothing else, if we're just going to isolate this lesson to this example of unshakable faith, is this, is that David, in this moment, you ready for this? This is going to be hard to remember. In an act, in the presence of an act of God, David decided to trust God. Like I said, really tough. It's going to be hard to remember. He trusted God in this moment. I know that's not novel. I know that that's pretty simple. But he just, in this moment, it's this idea of I don't understand and I don't get it, and maybe there is some logical, critical frustrations I have to work through, but I'm just going to latch onto it for now and see where it goes. And I think that that's sort of a picture about doubt, a picture about grief, a picture about anger with God or how you perceive God to be acting, is I don't understand this, but I'm going to hold on anyway. So what we're going to do is we're looking at a timeline of events of how David worked through this or what he initially did. And they're not all going to work as finely as like chronological or linear as I'd like for them to be, but we're going to still work through them and treat them that way. So let's start off with this. How did David choose to trust God? He started off, first off, by learning to wait on the Lord again. He just needed to wait and allow God in his timing. Let's notice the degree and the situation by which he waits on the Lord. Let's go over to chapter 14, the very next chapter. The very next chapter is this ongoing hostility between him and the Philistines. You know, that's kind of what brought him into the whole kingly subject, right? We read this morning with Goliath, and he worked with them for a while, and now he's back at fighting them again. They're constantly the thorn in his side for a bit. And this is what takes place, is you see how meticulous he was to wait on God. Chapter 14, let's start off with verse 10. Verse 10 reads, "And David inquired of God, 'Shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you give them into my hand?' And the Lord said to him, 'Go up, and I will give them into your hand.'" And so, all right, already, if you remember one of Saul, his, you know, he followed Saul as a king. Saul impulsively, in a moment of doubt and uncertainty and not getting the answers he was looking for from Samuel, acted in his own accord and, like, impulsively just did what his gut told him to do, and it caused him some issues, right? And David, again, is this nice, like, comparison or contrast to King Saul, where he, in this moment, again, after having a big mistake, he paused, and he sought, and he inquired from the Lord. And God gives him direction. But it doesn't just end there. Go over to verse 13. "And the Philistines yet again made a raid in the valley. And when David had again inquired of God, God said to him, 'You shall not go up after them. Go around and come against them opposite the balsam trees. And when you hear the sound of the marching in the tops of the balsam trees, then go out to battle. For God has gone out before you to strike down the army of the Philistines.'" So not once, but twice. Like, it's like he's almost covering his bases. Like, he's already asked, can I go against the Philistines? And God's like, yes, you're good. And he could have just been like, that's good, man. Like, I got my what I'm looking for. And instead, he says, let me ask one more time. And God, honoring that kind of inquisitiveness and that kind of, like, thoroughness, is like, yeah, good request, because this time we're going to go from a different approach. And again, I'm not here saying, like, always be scared and always be careful, because you never know when you're going to get struck down. But it's this idea of, are you always in step with the will of God? Are you always seeking the counsel of God? And what David did in this moment of, you know, sometimes acts of God are because of ours or others' failures, but sometimes they just take place. Sometimes they just happen. And still taking this as a moment to pause and just say, I am going to hold on to the will of God and make sure that I am seeking his counsel, I am waiting on his timing, and I am continuing to go to him during such a fragile time. And you see that precaution paying off for David, where he's so meticulously being precautious, and it's like God is saying, yes, that's a good insight. Hold on to me. Wait for me. Lean on me. He learned to trust in the Lord by learning to wait on the Lord once again after he had kind of foolishly neglected waiting on the Lord. Secondly, he trusted God by learning to implement what God and God alone said. Let's go over to chapter 15. This place seemed to hit David. Whether he was in agreement with God and his discipline against Uzzah or not doesn't really matter. It's not addressed. We don't see him even mentioned again, but he acknowledges that, hey, we still need to rectify this issue, right? The Ark of the Covenant is not where it ought to be, and we still need to take precautions to make sure this is okay. So what does he do? Chapter 15, verse 2 reads, "Then David said that no one but the Levites may carry the Ark of God, for the Lord had chosen them to carry the Ark of the Lord and to minister to him forever." So again, he's like, let's go back to what was initiated. This is the way you do things. Hold on to me. Let's skip down to verse 12 and 13. "And said to the others, you are the heads of the house of father's houses of the Levites. Consecrate yourselves, you and your brothers, so that you may bring up the Ark of the Lord, that God of Israel, the God of Israel, to the place that I have prepared for it. Because you did not carry it the first time, the Lord our God broke out against us because we did not seek him according to the rule." So you see here that what he does is he understands in this moment of fragile faith, in this moment of frustration, in this moment of difficult circumstances, he chooses to wait on God, and then he starts realizing, I need to align my life and my character and my decisions based upon God. And again, this isn't this lesson about always following the, you know, the rule of God. Yes, we follow God's will, but we understand we are under grace. We're in a relationship with God. It's not this meticulously laid out law or list of rules anymore, but this is this idea of, man, I face obstacles whenever I keep going my way, and it's up to me to realize that God's way and God's path and God's allotment in my life is what blesses me. And so hold on to him, even whenever you're frustrated. Hold on to him, even whenever you're confused. Hold on to him. Holding to his path and expecting it of others after seeing the consequences of any other errors should convict us to hold on to him more, even if in the moment we don't fully understand. Even in the moment, if we don't fully agree. So he learned to trust in God by waiting for the Lord. By honoring and obtaining and holding onto his word above anything else. And thirdly, what we see what happens here, because it's kind of this evolution that takes place here, is he learned reverence and joy in God's ways again. Let's go to chapter 15, the end. Chapter 16 is this great, almost like worship service that takes place. A lot of rejoicing, a lot of jubilation, I think I used that word again this morning. But like, it's this great ceremonious moment of worship. But notice what kind of transpires leading up to it. In verse 25 of chapter 15. So David and the elders of Israel and the commanders of thousands went to bring up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord from the house of Obed-Edom with rejoicing. And because God helped the Levites who were carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, they sacrificed 7 bulls and 7 rams. David was clothed with a robe of fine linen, as also were all the Levites who were carrying the Ark, and the singers and the Chenaniah, the leader of the music of the singers. And David wore a linen ephod. So all of Israel brought up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord with shouting to the sounds of horns, trumpets, and cymbals, and made loud music on harps and lyrics. One thing I want us to understand here is this is a great moment of rejoicing, this great moment of understanding that God has been faithful, that God's way was correct, that God's way is good. It's trustworthy. But one thing I want us to understand about this is that David and Israel's character growth here, their excitement, their joy, cannot, and I do repeat, it cannot come to reverence and joy in the ways of the Lord, as he's seen here, if you have not chosen to follow it. Put another way is this. This lesson means a lot to me because a dear loved one of mine has gone through a deconstructionist movement. They have kind of pushed aside the Bible and therefore their faith, and then therefore they don't even believe in God anymore. And they don't see a value in God, the church, and even the principles of Scripture. And I guess what I'm saying here is this, I think this is a very real discussion for many of us, because when you face anger, doubt, frustration, tragedy, and you reject and you don't hold on to God, you don't just miraculously end up at this moment appreciating the will of God. You don't just come up at this moment automatically revering God's will. How you get from point A to point B, as demonstrated here by Israel and David, is you hold on to God even when you disagree. Because that's the whole idea of trusting in a relationship, right? Is even if I don't prefer it in the moment, I'm still going to be faithful and I'm still going to see what transpires here. And that's what's incredible about their example. Is again, if we're putting too much emphasis on David's gut reaction, fair enough, but it serves as a good example of he was angry and saddened by God. And yet he's now at this moment of pure rejoicing and understanding that there is a reason that God established his commands in a specific way, that why God's will is greater than ours, why God's way is better than my way. And see, you see all this take place here. He could have continued down in bleak anger and frustration if he had not chosen to align with the Lord, but he didn't. And so because of that trust, we see that he learned reverence and joy in his ways, in God's ways once again. The fourth thing I see point out from his example is this, is he learned to not take the Lord for granted again. He didn't take the Lord for granted in his counsel and his blessings and in his presence. Let's go down to the end of chapter 16. Chapter 16, let's see. While you could argue that they, the Israelites, David, jumped in ignorance to bring about the presence of the Lord back to Jerusalem, right? Like the whole reason they got into this great catastrophe is because like, hey, like we wanted God back with us. And so they were naively and ignorantly doing things, but you can see that they weren't like respecting God, right? It's kind of the consequences they were dealt with. They didn't fully appreciate God's role in their lives. They wanted him, but only in their terms. They dealt with those consequences. And so by reassessing the situation, came to this important opinion as a leadership that every leader and every man or woman can choose today. I will not take God. I will not take his blessings, and I will not take his presence and his will for my life for granted. And you see this like uniformed decision-making that takes place here. And you see what happens here, verse 37 of chapter 16. So David left Asaph and his brothers there before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord to minister regularly before the Ark as each day required. And again, you see them going back to like, hey, this is what it means to be, is to honor the presence of God as a community and as a kingdom. Is that we will value him, we will value his presence, and we will do so repeatedly day after day. And then, if you were here this morning, I like the little, what do you call it, the little lock-in. But we're going to get now to chapter 17. Because see how else they continue to uphold, and David upholds his presence. As we come back to where we started this morning, chapter 17, verse 1. Now when David lived in his house, David said to Nathan the prophet, "Behold, I dwell in a house of cedar, but the ark of the covenant of the Lord is under a tent." And Nathan said to him, "Do all that is in your heart, for God is with you." Well, I like this story is this, is like what we discussed this morning is chapter 17 here in 1 Chronicles and then chapter 7 in 2 Samuel. It's like the pinnacle point for David's lineage, his dynasty. And all of it took place by this great failure as a leader, as a new, young, excited leader. This ignorance as a community, this failure to honor God, and a moment that honestly could have been a huge trajectory moment for David's faith. Or again, I don't want to project this on David, but he could have stepped away in his anger and his hostility, and yet through it he became strong and he came to this realization that I need to honor God in my house. I need to honor God in my kingdom, and I need to build something for him. And you see how important it was for him to go on this emotional and faith journey, because he learns to not take the Lord God for granted in his counsel and his blessing and in his presence. And so hold on to God's presence in your life and understand how pivotal it is. Sometimes you won't always feel it in the way that you should, but you can strive for it and see his blessings for you in your life. And then let's end with this one, as he learns the blessings of the ways and the love of the Lord. Again, you understand what happened. We talked about that this morning. Let's go to verse 11. Go down to verse 11. When your days are fulfilled, God tells to David, to walk with your fathers, I will raise up from your offspring after you one of your own sons, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for me, and I will establish his throne forever. I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son. I will not take my steadfast love from him as I took it from him who was before you, but I will confirm him in my house and in my kingdom forever, and his throne shall be established forever. It all came down to this. He came to find God's blessings once again. He came to find God's will in his life. He came to understand, to revel in it, and to be the one with it. And to say, I want your way, I want your path, and I want your goodness to be king over not just this land, but the entire earth. This is a beautiful picture, because often when we face failure, questions, tragedy, or anger hit us, we simply ask why. Asking why, doubting, and working through those critical feelings to process it, I do believe is beneficial and can be helpful to the faith-building process. But there must be a choice at some point. At some time, you're not going to have the answers, and neither will I. There are going to be moments in our life where things aren't going to make sense, aren't going to feel fair, and won't have any sort of logic behind it. And it's up to us to make a decision. What will I latch on to? What will I trust in? What will I put my hope and faith in? And you see how much David was magnified in this moment. By working through this whole process, it brought about, again, his dynasty and the dynasty of God's kingdom here on earth and kingdom to come. Because in a moment of anger, he decided to trust in the Lord and not in his gut reaction. So, verse 16. Then King David went in and sat before the Lord and said, "Who am I, O Lord God, and what is my house that you have brought me this far?" The same man who was angry, impatient, self-reliant, afraid, confused, has come to this. Something that we can't come to in the midst of anger, frustration, confusion, fear, and disagreements with God. Instead, this is the outcome of only those who choose to trust in the midst of challenges. An act of God has turned many from the blessings of the Lord. I think perhaps that is the point. It's kind of that refining fire. But look to David's example in the midst of the question, in the midst of the doubt, in the midst of the anger. He chose God. And you see where God took him. Faith, belief, trust isn't just believing, it's choosing. It's all in. It's putting your hope into something even whenever you don't see the path. That's what faith looks like. Thank you for hearing me. Let's stand and sing at this time.